So, yeah, if you'd like to have Ezekiel 1 open again in front of you. I wonder, I'd love to have been a fly on the wall in your mind as we were reading that chapter. What was going through your head? Could you make out what was going on, let alone what it means? What we have tonight is possibly one of the most strange and confusing chapters of the whole Bible. Probably about an hour before this service, I said to myself, why did you choose to speak on this? But the reason I did is because actually I think there's something here for all of us tonight, and we greatly need it. There's something in this chapter, whether you're a Christian tonight or a non-Christian, that is actually a simple truth at the end of the day, but one that will actually change everything. It's profound. So let's just jump straight in. There's not going to be much of an introduction, but there will be some preliminary questions before we dive into the actual vision. So there's a vision that's going on here. The first thing I want to ask tonight is, what is going on in this chapter? There's a vision, but what's actually happening? And for that, let's just read verses 1 to 3 again, or particularly just verse 1. In the 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day of the month, as I was among the exiles by the Kibar Canal, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. And then we read verse 3. The word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest. So what we're seeing in this chapter is a man called Ezekiel. He's a believer. We read he's a priest, so he's a serious man of God, you could say. And he knew God, he believed God. But this day we're about to read is about to change his life forever. Things will never be the same again. What essentially happened in this chapter? Well, we see in verse 28, skip right down to the end of chapter 1, and you get a summary of what actually happened here, the end of verse 28. Such was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. So we can summarize this chapter as essentially this: Ezekiel saw the glory of God. That's what happened in this chapter. Glory. What does that word glory mean? It's not actually easy to define. When we use it today, you might think of fame, beauty, victory. So when I was growing up, I was a Man United fan, I'm ashamed to say. And there was a song called Glory, Glory, Man United. That's the only time I heard the word glory. What does that actually mean? Well, in Hebrew, the word can translate heavy. It's interesting. How does that relate? When you can say there's a heaviness to someone. Have you ever said that? Now, I'm not talking about physical weight. I'm not saying someone's overweight. There's a weight to someone, a significance. So think about if right now King Charles walked into this room, there would be a hush presence. That's weightiness and significance. There's glory, right? And when we're saying God's glory, we're talking about his significance, his weightiness, his worth, his value. And Ezekiel that day saw God's glory. You could say he saw God is God. That's what he saw. He knew it. He felt it. He was moved by it. So secondly, why does this matter? Have to ask this. Why is seeing God's glory important? Who cares, society would say today. Who cares? No one cares about God, let alone his glory, his significance. God is insignificant, but it does matter because we are all seeking glory. Every single one of us in this room is seeking glory. We're looking for something significant to live for, something worth my life. We all have it. And there's something you've pinned your hope on. There's something. I don't know what it is for you. Maybe it's a jumbled mix of things. Sometimes it's just a bit of that and a bit of this. Maybe it's, I'll go for the obvious ones, career, spouse, maybe insignificant stuff really, but it's significant to you, your football team winning the league. I don't know what it is that you are saying, oh, if that happens, oh, yes, my life will be worth it. What's most glorious to you in life? What's most significant? Here's the important thing. Whatever it is, you end up living for it. Whatever that thing is that you've got in your mind, yes, this is what life's all about, you live for it. It becomes your reason for existence. You actually worship it. This is what life's all about. So it does matter. Let me give you examples of how that works out. So I keep mentioning football. Let's just go with it. So imagine a football-mad person. They do exist, right? I know that people here support football teams, and there are people in this world, their life revolves around football. I was one of them. I supported Spurs, so you can imagine how that went for me. When Spurs lost, my phone would probably be avoided for the weekend in case anyone called me. So it would affect my communication with people. My world did kind of revolve around how well football teams did. Now, if you went to this football mad person, you would find their bedroom has been affected by it, their wardrobe, what they wear, what they do on the weekend, what they listen to, how they spend their time. That's football. Imagine something more significant like a spouse. Imagine if the thing you've lived for is I want to find the perfect relationship. I want to find that boyfriend or girlfriend that I can spend my life with, that marriage. Think about how that rules your life. While you're single, all you think about is I need to find that person. When you get married or when you're with this person, you think you found them, then the weight goes on them. They've got to fulfill this, but they're not. It's a horrible life. When we pin in stuff on things, it's a horrible life when it lets you down. That's the point. Maybe some of you are heartbroken, your hopes have been dashed. Have you pinned your hopes on something and it's let you down? Well, the thing is, it will always be this way because we were made this way. We were made to look for glory, something significant, but it was one place we were supposed to look for that, God. That's the message of the Bible. God's glory alone can fill the weight that I'm looking for. I'm looking for something that can carry the weight of my hopes and dreams. God alone can do it. That's the message of the Bible. We were made for him. Now, the problem, obviously, is we haven't found that. So we've rejected him and we've said, right, I'm going to find it in something that he's made. But logically, how is that ever going to work? The thing that he made was made by him. He's the only one we can find it. So this was the state of things at the time of Ezekiel. This is what he was surrounded by. This is what he grew up in. That's why we're talking about this. And that's why this vision relates, because it's dealing with this issue. So this does relate to everyone. And what happens here is Ezekiel discovers the most important discovery that anyone could make. God alone is glorious. But another question, because Ezekiel was a believer already, so surely he knew this. Surely he knew God alone is worthy of my life. Surely he knew it. So why was this necessary for Ezekiel? Why here? Why now? And why should we consider it tonight? Well, let's think about this situation. Did you notice in verse 1, as I was among the exiles by the Kibar Canal? That's just maybe said in passing to us today. It doesn't really mean anything. For him, can I translate that? He's saying, my world's been turned upside down. Why? He's supposed to be in Jerusalem at the temple, serving as a priest to the God that he loves. He has been dragged away from that city along with other exiles, taken away into a foreign land. Just try and imagine it for a minute. Imagine if London was suddenly invaded by an army and all of us were dragged away to that country and made to live there from our homes, and we had to adapt to this new culture, and they were quite cruel people. That kind of gives us an idea, but still doesn't quite capture it, because these people believed in God, and this was supposed to be God's home, and Ezekiel was supposed to serve his God here, and now he's in the Kibar Canal, stagnant, dull, these intimidating Babylon around him, and for him, can you imagine how this relates now to God's glory? He's thinking, I thought God was glorious. He's far away. He seems insignificant because Babylon have just come and dragged us away. I'm kind of tempted by Babylon because they seem quite like they're living a good life. They worship all these gods. Maybe they're right and I'm wrong. They're having a great time. And where has following God got me? I'm sitting by a canal away from my home. Can you see how the thought in his mind is starting to be, is God glorious after all? Is God the one to live for? And then think about the people he's going to be sent to. He's a prophet. He's going to be sent to people who have long ago rejected God. They've turned and bowed. Imagine this. They're bowing down and worshipping statues of creeping things in the temple that they were supposed to be worshipping. That's how bad things have got. He's supposed to going to be sent to them about this God. Do you see how this relates, this topic of God's glory? And it's more important than just, if I live for something else other than God, my life's going to be miserable. It is that, but it's more than that. Because in Ezekiel, we see that that life leads to judgment. That was the whole message of Babylon invading Jerusalem. If you're not going to see God as the most significant thing, your life is only heading in one direction: judgment, death, and as we know now, as we read our Bibles, hell. So this is serious. This topic about discovering if God is the one to live for, everything hangs on this. So do you see it? Do you see God's glory? When was the last time? Let's ask some questions to maybe figure that out. This is not comprehensive, but it might give an idea. When was the last time you were genuinely moved by God? The thought of God, who he is. When was the last time you were overwhelmed, shouting for joy, weeping about God? When was the last time you were excited about God? When was the last time you were excited to come to church, excited to read the Bible? Not to see your friends at church, but to hear from God. Not to hear from this preacher, oh great, this preacher's preaching. No, I want to hear God. When was the last time that happened? When was the last time you prayed to God as though he was actually listening? This is real. When was the last time you sung to God and you were actually singing to him and not just mumbling words on a screen? Not that that's what we do, but you get the point. When was the last time I genuinely feared God? I actually was afraid to sin against him because of who he is, not because of any other reason. When was the last time that happened? Has it ever happened? Have you ever known any of these things? Maybe your only memory or thought of God is boredom. Maybe you've grown up in the church and actually you like church because it's social. I like the people, they're nice. But whenever it comes to anything to do with God, it is boredom. I've never been affected. I heard a testimony from, I'll share this, John Kasem. John Kasem, apparently for most of his life, I haven't asked him if I can share this, but he did share it at Friday Nighters. He sat through church and was unmoved, he said. Nothing hit him. He understood everything on some level, but the reality of it never actually moved him until one day God hit him. So that, do you see how this links to God's glory? Because if I see God as glorious and he's the most significant thing, of course there will be some of that I've just described. Of course. So if that's you tonight, we need Ezekiel 1. So that's the preliminary questions done. Now let's actually get into the vision. What actually happened? How did God show Ezekiel his glory? Now this is the bit I love. God could have done it in so many ways, and he does it in the way that we just read. It's not even just a vision. It's a whole other kind of vision. There's many visions in the Bible. God shows his glory through this. Living creatures flying around, wheels turning and wheels within wheels, and that's God saying, this is my glory. It's amazing. If you think God's boring, this is saying you haven't met him. You haven't met this God. And look at Ezekiel. He's on his face by the end of it. In fact, throughout the whole chapter, he's stumbling for words. Did you notice he kept saying likeness? What was the likeness? The appearance, the likeness. They're not quite that, but they're like that. He can't describe it. Apparently, the Hebrew here is very hard to translate. I can't speak Hebrew, but that's what I've heard. It's very hard to get what he's getting at, which is telling us something. This is too much. He can't describe it. He's trying to. Do you know what I find is amazing as well? He could have gone back and changed this to make it more clear. He could have. He could have written in this chapter one, God appeared to me, and here's 5 points about God that I learned. A nice 5-point sermon. God is powerful. He's a God of authority. He doesn't do that. He describes the vision as he witnessed it. That's got to be significant. And I think what it's doing for us is it's telling us, come into Ezekiel's shoes. Experience what he experienced. You have to experience this too. I think that's what this is saying. So what we're going to do is we're going to try and go through this vision. We're going to fly through it because we don't have time. And we're just going to try and capture a sense of it. Pick up some main things. So what is the first thing that happens? Well, verse 1, the heavens were opened. That already tells us another world is breaking into his life. Right? The heavens were opened. Verse 4, as I looked, behold, a stormy wind came out of the north. So immediately, he's there sitting by the canal any old day, and suddenly this stormy wind comes out of the north. So just imagine the wind blowing in his face and he can hardly even look up. It's a powerful stormy wind coming out of the north. Then suddenly a great cloud comes with brightness around it and fire flashing forth continually. So now suddenly there's this great cloud. It's a storm cloud and there's brightness around it. He's going like this. Wind's in his face, so his whole senses are affected, and there's fire flashing forth, so it's dangerous. There's fire flashing forth towards him, right? It's not safe. And then it says, from the midst of it, so from the midst of this, this storm cloud, came the likeness of four living creatures, right? So now, four living creatures. Okay, what's that going to be? You think it's going to be four living creatures, just... yeah. And then he starts describing them a bit more. They have a human likeness. Okay, that seems quite normal. They seem like humans. The silhouette seems human-like. He carries on. But each had four faces. So they're like cube people. Like one this way, one this way, one this way, one this way. They're looking in all directions. And he's saying it's not even just that. Their legs are straight. They've got calf's feet. So there's this big mixture of things going on, and they sparkled like burnished bronze. So even just the appearance of them is dazzling, let alone everything else. So I hope you're getting a sense so far, right? Then we're going to go through a bit more. Firstly, there's wings. Now, there might be a nice conundrum here for you to work out. How can the wings be touching and they're moving in all directions without turning? That's like a riddle. What do you think the formation of these people are? If their wings are all touching, they can't all be in a line because they're able to move in all directions without turning. Do you get, am I making sense here? They're like a cube. So one's like this, one's like this, one's like this. So they're like looking in all directions and they're seeing in all directions and they're moving in all directions. And then we go further. I'm flying through this because of time. They're not turning, so they're seeing everything at all times. Nothing escapes their sight. And there's this constant appearance of fire. So danger, danger, danger. That's all you're seeing as you look out. And not just that, they're darting forth like lightning. They're moving, you've seen lightning. They're moving so quick. And they're coming towards him. How would you think he felt at this moment? Trembling. What is going on? Then we get to verse 15. Something new comes on the scene. Wheels. Now, wheels are quite average things. We don't really get amazed at wheels. This has a few things going on. The wheels are tall and awesome. Now, I don't know how big these were, but if they're tall and awesome, and this is to do with God, just picture what's the biggest wheel you can think of. We're not talking car wheels. We're talking about these great big wheels that people go on. London Eye. Could be like that. And there's eyes all around the wheels, so the wheels are looking... and they're seeing constantly, and there's a wheel within a wheel, so it's able to move in all directions. It doesn't have to turn, right? And they're beryl, so we're seeing colour, green. This is captivating. I hope you're sensing it. But this is something that Ezekiel keeps saying, where the spirit wanted to go, they went. So there's this unity. They're almost like one creature, it feels like, because they're all moving in such unity they're not turning because they're all seen in different directions, and they're not fighting to go in this way and that way. They're all achieving the same thing. There's one spirit that is guiding all of them, right? So it's not chaotic. They know exactly what they're doing. They're all in unison together. Terrifying. That's even more terrifying. And then we get to verse 22. By the way, it flies as well, just to add to it. So they're actually flying at times and then on the ground. So everything's covered. They can't not go anywhere. Everything's within them. Now you're already amazed by this, I hope. Or I don't know, I probably haven't done justice to this. But verse 22. Now it's like he starts to look up. So this has captured him. And now he's looking up. The camera's panning up. And there's this expanse. So there's this dome over them. And you're like, wow, there's something above them now. Okay. And it's crystal. And again, he starts to describe the living creatures again up to verse 25. He describes them more because he's still captivated by them. Then listen to verse 25. And there came a voice from above the expanse over their heads. There's someone above them. There's a voice above these creatures. There's someone higher than them. And they let down their wings. You get the sense of suspense. Verse 26. And above the expanse of their heads, there was the likeness of a throne in appearance like sapphire. This great big blue throne. And seated above the likeness of a throne was the likeness with a human appearance. Take this in for a minute. Imagine everything that I've just described, and now you've realized someone is sitting above them in complete control of everything that they're doing. Ezekiel has just seen God in a human appearance, a likeness of a human appearance. He's just seen Yahweh, the eternal God. And if the chariot was terrifying, imagine how the man sitting on it felt like. I've just called it a chariot. That's essentially what it is. And he's on fire, this man. And then to top it all off, verse 28, like the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud on a day of rain was the appearance of the brightness all around. This person is bright to the point where everything else is dark in comparison. The brightness is beautiful. It's like a rainbow. There's color. So do you see what's happening here? On the one hand, Ezekiel is captivated. This is beautiful. But on the other hand, he is absolutely terrified and he feels both at the same time. Have you ever felt that before? It's a rare experience, but it should happen when you come into contact with God. Ezekiel saw God. Now, let's try and get our heads around what some of this means. We're not going to go through. You know, when I was preparing this, I nearly did a kind of, here's five things that Ezekiel saw about God. I don't think that we should do that here. So let's just try and imagine some of the things that stood out to him and try and sense, what is that saying about God? Does it say anything? Of course it does, because this is not just an experience for experience sake. So let's try and capture some of the things that were being hit home to Ezekiel in this moment. Firstly, he saw a throne. Immediately, that tells you something. What does throne say? It says this person is in charge. But when you look at what he's in charge of, picture the chariot again. Why is it the way it is? Four, the number four. Why is there creatures and there's an ox and a lion and an eagle capturing different parts of the animal kingdom? Why is there an expanse? If you knew your Old Testament, this is saying to you, this is like whole creation merged into one. Squashed into something that you can see, wow. Just picture the universe and God sitting over it. And everything that is, what this is saying is everything that's happening in the universe is happening exactly as the one on the throne says. That's what this is saying. Everything is under God's control. How much did Ezekiel need to know that? Picture where he was. dragged away from his home. Everything has gone wrong. Babylon has come in. They seem like the strong ones. And no, God has even used them as part of his plan. Why? Well, think about other things that he saw. He saw these, let's add up some of the things, a storm, fire, danger. It's telling us that God is not happy. Storm is, there's an anger here. Do you feel that when there's thunder? Do you shudder? Do you sense something doesn't feel right? How do you think he felt here? There's anger here. It's a war chariot. When do you use chariots? War. God's come in war. Why? One more thing. He's holy. Think about that expanse. Think about what that said. There's all the stuff going on down here, living creatures and everything. Then there's this dome, and God's above the dome. Heaven, earth. That's saying something very important here. God is separate from everything you are used to in this world. Whether it's good, he's the extreme best of that, but mostly the bad. Everything bad that you have seen, witnessed, experienced, he is completely separate from. He is above it. He's not mixed in with his creation. We need to know that. Ezekiel needed to know that. God is holy, holy, holy. There is none like him. You can look through all the creation. You can scour the chariot and be amazed. Wow, look at the four living creatures. Look at the fire. Look at the wheels. But then when you see the one on the throne, no, this is the one. This is the one. Do you see how this is linking to God's glory? It's separating him from everything else. And Ezekiel needed to know that because how much have we been let down in this world by corruption? Babylon. He's under King Nebuchadnezzar right now, the king of Babylon. He needs to see that God is not like what you found in this world. Whatever you've experienced in this life, however you've been let down, whatever's been done to you, God is pure. There is no sin in him, no darkness in him. He's bright. And that's why he's coming in judgment, because he cannot allow sin to be continued. He said enough. So there's more we could say, but just that for now. When was the last time you saw God like this? Have we flattened God down into our picture? When was the last time I realized that he is really angry at sin and he is so pure that he cannot even look upon sin? When was the last time I saw that he really is over everything that I see today? He really is. But one more thing. There was a ray of hope. Verse 28. Like the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud on a day of rain. Do you know what that says? As dark as things are, Ezekiel, as dark as things are to you right now, there is a brightness still. And rainbow is significant. God is still faithful. We saw it this morning. Ezekiel ends on such a bright note that it is overwhelming. God is still a God of mercy. He's still a God of faithfulness, even though he must come in judgment. What's happening here is Ezekiel is seeing who God is. But the main point is this. It's too much for him. Did you notice verse 28? Like the appearance of the bow... No, sorry, last part of verse 28. Such was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. Did you notice that? Appearance of the likeness of the glory. It's two steps back. I haven't even quite seen his glory, but I've seen the appearance of the likeness of it. Do you know what that's like? It's like New Year's Eve. You watch a fireworks display, and I watch it on my TV, and I film the TV on my phone, and I post it on YouTube, and you watch the video on YouTube on your phone, and you're trying to get a sense of the fireworks. This is even more than that. But what we're trying to say is, even as overwhelming as this was, it was just a glimpse. That's why he's so overwhelmed. That's why he's falling over his words. It's too much. God is too much. It's like you've dipped your foot in the shallows of an ocean, and even that is too much for you. Let alone diving into the ocean. Have you lost this sight of God? That he is so great, I'm speechless. He's so big. He's so great. He's so glorious. But don't miss this bit as well. Even though that is true, who is coming to who? God is coming to Ezekiel to speak to him, to send him, to call out to a people who won't listen. He's still calling out. He's still calling out. The God who is so far and beyond is still the God who draws near. And he's near tonight. And that's why we're looking at this chapter. Because God is doing the same thing tonight. He's so far beyond us. But every Sunday, every day he's speaking to you. But particularly Sunday, when you're hearing his word, he is coming among us and saying, I'm God. I'm here. I'm speaking to you. Do you see that in verse? Well, that's why we read chapter 2, 1, verse 1. Son of man, stand on your feet and I will speak with you. He's a speaking God. He comes to speak so that we may know him. That's the God that we're talking about. So as we kind of have our last point now, this is what tonight is all about. A call to see something of what Ezekiel saw. That's what tonight is about. That we might see something of what Ezekiel saw. Now, you might have not been looking for this tonight. You might have just come to church, nice Sunday evening, thinking about my week ahead. I've got all this stuff to do, and I want to chat with my friends afterwards and go home. No. This is a call to see the glory of God, to catch a glimpse. Whatever state you're in tonight, Ezekiel was in a state. Whatever state you're in tonight, God says, you need to see me. That is the thing you need. Now, you might say, but we haven't seen this like Ezekiel did. We're reading a book. But it's been recorded for us so that we might see by faith. That's why I think it's been recorded the way it is, so we can capture it. But we must see it by faith. We're not going to get to see a vision like this, very unlikely. What is faith? Faith is seeing the unseen as real as the things I can see, even more real. So faith in this instance would be you taking Ezekiel 1 and saying, I believe this is true. I believe this is God. So much so, it's going to affect my whole life and I'm going to live for him. That would be a response to Ezekiel 1 of faith. I'm going to live my life as though he really is king. Because he is. I'm going to live my life because he is holy. So I'm going to treat him as holy. I'm going to live for him alone. I'm going to be afraid to sin because he is the God who hates sin. It's that kind of response I think we need. But we can say more. I can say tonight that we can see clearer God's glory than Ezekiel did. How? Because he saw a man with a likeness of a human appearance. What do we see as we go through the Bible further? This person on the throne actually became a human being. Think about that. The same God that we've been talking about actually became a baby. Can you put the two together? So put Ezekiel's vision here and then put Bethlehem, Virgin Mary having a baby here. Can you put the two together? He's the same God. He actually became man. We could see him, John says. We could touch him. It wasn't just this appearance of a human on this throne. He left the throne, came down. I was saying that he draws near to Ezekiel, but Christ as a baby, living among us as a man. And then we look at his life and you're seeing power like you've never seen it, authority like you've never seen it. He tells the demons to go, they do. He heals, he raises the dead. And what holiness. We thought this was holiness like we've never seen. But then we see Christ step the earth and he lives this perfect life of love. He loves his Father. He loves us. And then what nearness. He's the friend of sinners. There was no one like this. And then what about the climax, the cross? You thought it was amazing to see the man on this chariot throne, but then to look at the same person hanging on a cross. How? Here is justice. I thought I saw justice here. That was justice, but this, that is real justice for sin. The Son of God dying, the innocent one, the holy one, taking my sin. What mercy. He would do this. It's almost like he was thrown in front of the chariot. This chariot's coming towards us, terrifying. Jesus stands in the way and it smashes. And we're saved. This is what Jesus did. He died for those sins that God was coming for. And we're saved. What glory, what love, what mercy, what power. When we look at his resurrection, the power, his ascension, and to think that he's here now by his Spirit. We're hearing about the Spirit this morning. He's actually here. The same God that we witness in Ezekiel 1 is living inside us by his Spirit as believers. Can you take it in? Do you know what I find so interesting? When you get to Revelation 5, last book of the Bible, this vision repeats. But there's a difference. The Lamb of God is slain and he stands between the throne and the four living creatures. And do you know what those living creatures do? They fall on their faces and worship the Lamb. That's why we read it earlier. We see a whole other level of glory. And how much more should we fall on our faces in worship of this God? There is none like him. Who is like him? Who will love me like him? Who will be in control like him? Who is holy like him? There is none like him. So, Christian, do you see him? Do you see Jesus like this? Do you see the glory of God? Maybe you once did. This has been challenging for me to preach on because I don't feel I see his glory. I struggled with this message. How can I preach on this when I see so little of it myself? I'm so much about me, so little about looking at him. If I just caught a glimpse, how I would fear to sin against him, how I would worship in awe, and speechless, how I would be comforted. That's something that this did. Comforted to know that the king is on the throne. And nothing has gone wrong. Everything seems to have gone wrong. This did so much for Ezekiel. This strengthened him. Because if I'm serving the king who's on that throne, I can tell anyone anything in the king's name. How this would embolden us for evangelism if I saw this in my spiritual eye on a daily basis. Imagine if we saw something of this vision on a day and we knew it was true. Imagine how your life would change if you saw, wow, this is real. Now, others here, not anyone here who maybe hasn't become a Christian yet or is searching, there has to be a sobering message for you. This vision was scary for Ezekiel, but he was safe. The chariot wasn't coming for him. If you're not in Christ tonight, if you have not come to Christ for the forgiveness of your sins, believing and repenting, then you are on a collision course with this God that we've just been talking about. He is angry at your sin. And one day, he will return, and it will be real. Real in the sense of not a likeness of an appearance of this. It will be real. And everyone will cry for the rocks to cover them. They've realized it's true. He was God all along. I haven't trusted in Christ. Cover me from his view. That's what's going to happen one day. And I don't know how you can hear these things and not flee to Christ for safety. He stands here tonight and he says, come to me. Come and be saved. I will save you. I've taken away all your sins. If only you would come and trust in me. He stands like this. Will you not come to him while there's time? You don't know how long you've got. You're not on safe terms with God. Come to Christ. He's done everything necessary. He's done it at great cost to himself. As we close tonight, if you're bored with the things of God, this chapter tells you something's wrong. If I'm more excited about blank than church, something's wrong. If this is real, why am I more excited about these things than him? Do you see what this chapter's saying? If I'm more worried about what friends think of me than this one, something's wrong. If I sin willingly over and over again, knowing it's wrong, but he's a God of grace, something's wrong. I don't see this. I'm not seeing Ezekiel 1. I've lost sight of the true sight of God. We need to see God's glory. Everything will change if you saw God as he is. A glimpse of what Ezekiel saw. So don't settle for less. Even let's ask tonight, Lord, show me your glory. Just one glimpse of God would change everything.